Okay, so if you take the example, let's say of a commodities market, so marketplace where I can buy, I don't know, vegetables, or where farmers are selling their production. And on the other side, we have, factories and global companies making soup, getting back to the soup, but also supermarkets that need also vegetables to put in their shelves. What your model does is at the marketplace level, try to make it a healthy playing field where it's being
Yes.
played tough and fair. Is that?
Yeah. Basically, what my system does is has a negotiation market where the two sides can come together and negotiate not on their own behalf, but on the behalf of everyone. And so this system has to come up with a price that will be broadly interesting. And then we test that pre-negotiation, sort of like our shopkeeper example, by putting that price on things and seeing how much people actually want to offer for sale and actually buy. So if the negotiators did a good job, then the buy and sell will be in balance. If negotiators did a bad job, then they'll be out of balance, and that becomes a sign for future negotiation that it's time to adjust the price. So everybody trades at the same price that everybody else trades at, and everyone contributes to whatever degree they want to in a negotiation to figure out what those prices are going to be.
Okay. Hi, welcome to Digital Explain to My Mom, the podcast that cuts through the marketing wow. My name is Sultan Simlali. I'm a business consultant passionate about marketing and technology. A couple of months ago, I had a hard time explaining to my mom what I was doing in my day job. I struggled so much that she politely said, interesting. Would you like more coffee?" Talking about an experience with friends and colleagues, I realized that I was not alone. This is why I have decided to go on a quest. Find a marketing professional that will be able to tell me who they are, what they do, in words my mom would understand. Enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome to Digital Explain to My Mom. Today is a special day. I'm going back to learning math. I have the pleasure to welcome Noah Healy, who's joining us from Charlottesville, Virginia, in the US. He's the owner of a company called CoreDisc, which we'll talk about. And he's a recreational mathematician, kind of hard to spell out when English is not your first language. And Noah has been working a lot on ideas around marketplace and gaming theory. So today we'll try to understand what marketplace is and gaming theory and all those subjects, and hoping then afterwards I'll be able to explain that to my mom. So thank you, Noah, for joining today.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah, I also hope to be able to get an explanation for my mom someday as well.
That's the only thing we try to do. Then we are successful with our lives. So tell me more about you.
Well, as you said, recreational mathematician, my interest is something called computational mathematics, which is the underlying theory that enables the construction and operation of computers. And that's also where I've been able to earn my living as a programmer or data scientist over the years. And the better part of a decade ago, while on sort of a personal sabbatical to look into some ideas around information theory and communication, I stumbled upon this game theoretic breakthrough in economics, and I've been working on the patent and promulgation of that ever since. So that's the short but complicated word version of what I do.
I think I got a couple of them, but Let's start with the beginning. So computational mathematics, is that related to programming, or is that a layer deeper than programming, or nothing to do with
it? It's essentially the mathematics of programs. So programs are themselves mathematical objects, and so they're related to several different branches. There's performance. So, you know, like Google has a thing where every page comes up within a fraction of a second. And so there's an entire mathematics about that sort of performance, those sorts of performance questions. There's also a connection to something called proof theory, which is how mathematicians explain to themselves that things are actually true or actually false. Probably the most famous proofs in the world are things like Pythagorean theorem. There are innumerable proofs of the fact that in the Euclidean plane, a right-angle triangle has squared sides of the legs equals the square of the hypotenuse, and so on, to the point where it was actually incorrectly stated in The Wizard of Oz. But those two things are the principles of what's going on. Sort of between them is programming languages themselves. So it gets very meta and trippy, because the mathematics concerns the notation you're using, which you then use to describe the mathematics of the notation that you're using. And so there's a lot of infinity, a lot of recursion, a lot of things that are very easy to generate the eye glaze and get people into that's just too much for me to take. But the nice thing about it, and the reason like we're all here and computers can even work in the first place, is that it's a situation where you don't have to go all the way in and get to the very depths to gain the benefits. So, you know, there's a kiddie pool aspect to things, and you can dip your toes in and just kind of be in the shallow water. And then when you get comfortable with that, you can get in a little deeper. And as you get more and more comfortable, you can get further and further out into the sort of wilds and weirdness of what's out there.
you could do many things, like just spending your time gaming and doing other cool stuff, just getting drunk at the bar. So why mathematics?
It's beautiful and fascinating and different from other sort of purely mental activities. So like you were talking about, you can get drunk at the bar. You know, we have the sort of ability in the short term to make ourselves chemically happy, but that sort of thing doesn't last. And for real satisfaction and joy, you have to be doing something that's real and productive. And mathematics is the part of imagination that is real and productive. And so it's not just, you know, lots of people sort of get introduced to arithmetic, decide that adding numbers together is boring, and decide to walk away from mathematics. And it's a shame, because many, many things from graphic design to wordplay and so on have mathematical foundations, and they can be appreciated and grown into in that same kind of kiddie pool analogy. And so, yeah, this is the most important idea that we've ever had. Why wouldn't I want to think about that?
Yeah, that's I think it's a pretty good explanation, and it's actually it might push me to look back into mathematics from a different angle than just adding numbers and finding it boring. So let's jump into what you are doing with marketplace and gaming theory. How would you explain gaming theory so that our moms could understand it?
So game theory is one of the most flippantly named things in history. Another way to think of game theory is just strategic thinking. It's about how you should make decisions when there are other decision makers present where both of you will have an effect on outcomes. So many situations are just sort of you. You know, if you're in the kitchen and you're making a recipe, you put in the stuff or you don't put in the stuff, you know, you decide you don't like the flavor of this thing and so you leave it out of the soup, it's all fine. But if you're preparing that same thing for a family, then deciding that you don't like onions when everybody else, it's their favorite part of the soup, suddenly there's some trade-offs and you have to start thinking about, you know, what's going to lead to the outcome you actually want. Because if you don't make it the right way, maybe the kids refuse to eat and then you're not feeding your family anymore. So that's where game theory steps in, of when situations exist where multiple choices are being made from multiple points of view, what should or shouldn't you be doing in those situations? And there's a handful of things that we've actually discovered at a very general level about these things, some of which recapitulate things that are sort of common knowledge, but it's nice when math accords with what sort of our experience. So the first one is tough but fair. In many situations, people sort of have a choice of being nice or nasty. And in many situations, being nasty gives you an immediate advantage. If you were to cut in line, you'd be further ahead in line, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So in those sorts of situations, which arise all the time, how should you behave? Because obviously the other people also have the opportunity to be nice or nasty and could undercut you if you're not, you know, sort of taking care of yourself. It's been discovered that a very simple and incredibly powerful general strategy is this thing called tough but fair, which is you're nice initially to everybody in every situation. And then when you get into this position or are playing against this person again, you give back whatever you were given the last time. So if you're nice the first time and the other person's nasty, then the next time you encounter them, you're nasty that time. But you make a note. If they're nice back to you, then you'll be nice back to them the next time and so on. And tough but fair, there are actually simulation contests where mathematicians and scientists attempt to build strategic robots, if you will, to play games like this against each other. And there are some remarkably sophisticated strategies that eke out just barely above tough but fair sometime. But for decades, tough but fair has been crushing these types of competitions because it's a maximizing strategy for your well-being in those kinds of situations.
Okay, so if we take a let's say a concrete example of me having a shop and you are one of my customer, it would mean that we might, so you come to buy something from me, I'll be tough, but I will not rip you off. That's kind of the idea of being tough and fair.
Exactly, yes. Because in a commercial relationship, you could rip the other person off and it would be beneficial to you in the immediate term. Of course, we have laws, fortunately, that would work against that. But but yes, that kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. The kind of second general point is that usually optimal strategies are ones of indifference. So in a situation where you have sort of multiple choices and other people have multiple choices, you want to pursue a course of action which will make it so that you don't care what course of action the other player or the other players pursue. And a common example of this that again shows up in family life is dividing the last piece of cake. If you've got two kids and one piece of cake, the fair way to divide it is to have one of the two children cut the cake in half and have the other one pick which piece they want. And so the first child's best strategy is to cut the cake such that they don't care which half of the cake they get, because they're not going to control which half of the cake they get.
Yeah.
So in a situation where you can't control what other people are doing, which is most situations where other people are doing things, you want to arrange your own life so that it works out to be pretty much the same no matter what they do.
Yeah. And what you're trying to do is then to visualize and translate this kind of approach into math.
Yes.
And then apply that to marketplace and so on. Wow.
Well, and that's where things get fun, because when you apply these things to mathematics, many mathematical functions move in both directions. So marketplaces have people that have definite interests. Your shopkeeper wants to sell his products at the prices that are listed on them. A farmer wants to sell, or a miner wants to sell the stuff that he's pulling out of the ground. On the other hand, a factory owner wants to buy those things so that he can turn them into the products that he wants to sell, and so on. So the interests are sort of already coming to the table from the outside world. And the game theory gives us a way to find strategies for situations. So what I found is a way to use a computer to adjust a game to make the strategies, basically to alter the situation to make simpler strategies more effective. So right now, marketplaces... Okay, so right now, marketplaces are very complicated to interact with. There's a lot of moving parts. They move very, very quickly. A lot of sophistication is necessary to work with them. I've found a way to design a marketplace that is very simple to interact with, but which has the same sort of abilities of bringing in knowledge from many parties, aggregating it together into a actionable, you know, and broadcastable thing, and then allowing people to actually trade within a marketplace fairly without having to engage in the existing difficult parts of dealing with the existing markets.
Yeah. Okay, so if you take the example, let's say of a commodities market, so marketplace where I can buy, I don't know, vegetables, or where farmers are selling their production. And on the other side, we have, factories and global companies making soup, getting back to the soup, but also supermarkets that need also vegetables to put in their shelves. What your model does is at the marketplace level, try to make it a healthy playing field where it's being played tough and fair. Is that?
Yeah. Basically, what my system does is has a negotiation market where the two sides can come together and negotiate not on their own behalf, but on the behalf of everyone. And so this system has to come up with a price that will be broadly interesting. And then we test that pre-negotiation, sort of like our shopkeeper example, by putting that price on things and seeing how much people actually want to offer for sale and actually buy. So if the negotiators did a good job, then the buy and sell will be in balance. If negotiators did a bad job, then they'll be out of balance. Yeah. And that becomes a sign for future negotiation that it's time to adjust the price. So everybody trades at the same price that everybody else trades at. And everyone contributes to whatever degree they want to in a negotiation to figure out what those prices are going to be.
Okay, so let's say I'm selling 100 units of tomatoes. You have like five customers that each want to buy 30 tomatoes. The system will come up with a price actually that is acceptable for the seller, but also for the buyer, so that most of the people in the ecosystem might not be able to buy because there are not enough tomatoes.
So in a situation like that, the price might be a little too low, right? Because people want to buy 150 tomatoes and there's only 100 available. Those prices should be a little higher, so people actually only want to buy 100 tomatoes. But if you're in a situation where you're one of 300 farms that are each producing around 100 tomatoes, so there's around 30,000 tomatoes, and there's, you know, actually would... what would the balance number be there? So 150, so 300 would be 10 people. So there's 100 people that each want 30 tomatoes, and so they're in balance then at that point. The price at which you guys wanted to make those tomatoes is the price that these other guys want to buy those tomatoes at.
Yeah. And is that something that is not existing for the moment on marketplaces?
Existing marketplaces do this, and that's how things like the oil market or the corn market or the copper market function, is bringing buyers and sellers together in prices that they agree on. But the existing markets essentially do each deal individually. And that means that the price negotiation is essentially a private internal matter of the marketplace. And so, like, the guys in New York or Chicago or the City of London or something like that sort of chew up that part of the transaction. And those costs have been increasing over the last few decades, because computers and communication and so on benefit those players more than they benefit these kind of external players. And so what my system does is it sort of takes that middle out, flips them on their head, and gives them interests in common with everyone else in the market, and plugs them back in a way where the entire marketplace is now either winning or losing together, and each individual is winning sort of to the degree that they're making the marketplace work better for everybody.
Yeah. I think that's I would almost say a noble cause, but I imagine that it is probably hard to compete with existing interests that are currently not making a lot of money with the way the systems are working currently.
The startup is the hard part. There's a real chicken and egg issue like right now, because people aren't trading this way. It's very easy to say, oh, well, you're just some geek with an idea. Ideas are worthless. You know, we don't care. But I do have some traction. People are trying to stand up marketplaces with this. And the math is, in fact, quite compelling. So I hope to see those marketplaces launch and be successful. And, of course, once that happens, a lot of those arguments start going in reverse. Because once you can point to people who are much better off, then those interests are gaining by winning out over other customers who would be able to switch to this kind of way of doing things to their benefit. And the the customers that would be most incentivized to switch are the ones from whom the existing system is extracting most of its money. So there's there's a sort of strong undercurrent type of effect where the early adopters are sort of the worst people to lose for the existing system.
Yeah. But I think it's a very, actually, it's a very exciting and interesting concept where indeed the early adopters are getting some important ground. So if you look at, so in the Netherlands, we have a situation where there's some chemicals being, too much chemicals being produced by those large farms with thousands of cows, which are being just grown for export. The government now is trying to reduce that pollution and setting some rules and try to pay people off. And it generates a lot of issues. And those farmers are really angry because they're at risk of losing their investments and part of their livelihood. But the farmers that were using organic methods that were working smaller, more long-term vision, trying to be better actually for the environment and for the animals and everything, those guys are doing well. And they are not suffering as much as the other ones that were trying to gain by being too big and too large and highly short-term vision. And we see the same, I think, across multiple markets. So I think your application of GIMP theory into imperfect markets, I think it's a very exciting thing that you're trying to do.
Yeah, I hope so. And indeed, that's one of the big issues that we're seeing is that our economies are organized using marketplaces because we don't have any other thing that can do that. But existing markets incentivize getting better at playing that market structure rather than purely improving economic productivity. And in many cases, greater competition improves economic operation, whereas it actually degrades the individual rates of return. And that happens for farms, that happens for financial institutions, that happens for companies. You know, there's a reason why there's an Amazon and not 400, you know, independent online retailers that each specialize in one particular kind of retail good. Mm-hmm. But we may well be better off in a world where there are greater specialization, smaller scale, more nimble competitive actions. And so having markets that emphasize the sort of aggregate total, the whole economy, would give those sorts of players a leg up and an advantage over people who pull together enough scale that they can start sort of manipulating the market in their favor.
Yeah, we'll see. I'd love to keep following those adventure. So is there a way for the listeners and watchers of the show to connect with you, Noah?
Absolutely. I have a website, corddisc.com, CORDISC. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm Noah Healy on there. And my email, noahphealy@yahoo.com, will find me, and happy to chat about this or any other interesting math I happen to be thinking about at the time.
Oh, that's great. So thank you so much. If my kids have any math problems at school, I'll send them to you.
That's
your email.
That's what the people in my family do. Yes.
For me, they were asking me to repair their computer. So whenever there's a problem, they still do that. And I'll leave that down to my son. But thank you so much for taking the time, Noah, today. I'll share your details in the interview show notes, also in the description for people watching the interview on YouTube. Thanks so much, Noah, for being there today.
Thanks for having me. This was a joy.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. Digital Explained to My Mom is a show from Nostrus Media. To learn more about our shows, please visit nostrus.media, where you can sign up and be alerted whenever we have a new episode. I'm inviting you also to check Let's Talk About CX, our podcast where we discuss all things CX related with practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Check the show notes for a link to the podcast. Thank you.